to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm your host, Tammy Martin. So glad to have you back. If you'd like to join in the conversation, give us a text or a call here at 850-437-1620. We have Terrence A. Gross with Gross & Schuster here today with us. We're so excited to have him. Terry, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, and I appreciate that. And you know, I'm going to hit the ground running. I'm glad you gave a message where they can call or text you if they want to get into this. And I actually, sometimes after, I'll be candid. Every now and then I struggle. I said, what am I going to talk about? Mm-hmm. You know, can I do this? Can I do that? Here, I got a topic. There's just not enough time to talk about it. And I don't think anybody knows about this. So I'm about to let people know that the law in Florida has just changed drastically. You may be have been looking in the newspaper lately and seeing all the bills that are being pushed through this particular Congress and Senate in Tallahassee. And we saw, I don't want to get into the abortion thing because that 6-week thing looks like it's going, the gun thing. But what people don't understand is they've taken the tort system and turned it upside down. So nobody knows this yet. Lawyers know it, I hope. And they've taken Florida's jurisprudence that I've been practicing for 43 years and have turned it upside down. Now, as I go through this, many people may think, well, there's another lawyer whining because maybe he's not going to make as much money on personal injury cases. And that may be true. There may be some truth to that, but really it's the citizens that lose. It's the citizens, and I'm going to give you some many examples of the changes that they made. One change is this, and it sounds very subtle, but they seem to have eliminated awarding attorney's fees for the winner of a medical bill dispute under Florida No Fault. So I've been practicing since 1979, and throughout the whole 80s, a lot of no-fault carriers, they would fight the no-fault bills. And maybe a chiropractor would stop billing, and they'd say, oh, that's too much. That chiropractor, that's unreasonable. And they'd just quit paying. And that would leave, that means the client, even though they had full coverage with their car insurance, was left holding the bag. So I'd have to file a lawsuit. I always won. I never lost one of those cases. And invariably, the judge would award me several thousand dollars or whatever it was for the time that I spent, you know, litigating that issue. If they eliminate attorney's fees, then insurance companies could just deny benefits with no retribution. So they could, the doctor could order an MRI and the no-fault carrier would go, no, we're not paying for an MRI. And then the person's left holding the bag. If they don't have health insurance, they're really SOL. And even if they do have health insurance, if their health insurance does pay the bill, then at the end of the case, you have to pay health insurance back. So there's a lot to this that will come out of the average Joe's pocket if they are in a car wreck. So right now, no fault has been seamless. I haven't filed a no fault lawsuit personally in over 20 years, could be 25 years. I don't know the last time. I can't remember the last time because of the threat of attorney's fees, insurance companies just pay the bills, and it's only $10,000 anyway. If you go by ambulance to the ER, that could be $10,000. So really, it's been a non-event, but now that's been revived. Now, I will also share something with you. I have a dear friend of mine. He's in New Orleans, and I send all my New Orleans cases to him, and Maritime, and very good lawyer. And every time I would try to call him, his paralegal would say, well, he's in court. He's in depositions. I go, how can somebody be in court this much? This is crazy. So I finally asked him, I said, what's going on, dude? And he goes, I said, what percentage of your cases that you have are in litigation? He goes, 90% of my cases are in lawsuits. And he goes, how many of yours, Terry, are in lawsuits? I go, maybe 10%, sometimes maybe 15% tops, that's it. And we finally figured out the reason for that. It wasn't that he was a sue-happy lawyer, and it wasn't because I was afraid to sue. It was because Louisiana has a one-year statute of limitations. If you can't settle within 1 year, you have to file a lawsuit to toll the statute of limitations. Well, Florida's always had a full-year statute my whole career. and now they just have it. So any accidents that happen from pretty much April 1st on are going to be governed by a two-year statute of limitations. So yes, better than one, but some cases they just take time to develop. Here's a scenario I get all the time. Someone has a bad car wreck. They're taken by ambulance to the ER. They do all these scans, and the scans say, no broken neck, go home and rest, see your doctor, here's some pain pills for a week, have a nice day. And that's very typical. Then the person may see their doctor, they may go to a chiropractor, they bounce around. Several months later, when they don't get better, they finally order an MRI. The MRI may show if it's your neck, they may show a herniated cervical disc in your neck. And then all of a sudden, several months later, you're in a neurosurgeon's office that he's possibly discussing either injections or surgery. And most people don't want surgery right away. If someone said, hey, you know, it's 6 months after the wreck, do you want to have neck surgery? Most people said, no. But after 3 years, you may say, man, I fought it and fought it. I've had so many clients at 3 and 3.5 years after the accident finally succumb to the surgery because they just get tired of dealing with the pain and the radiation in the arms and all that. And so I'm seeing a lot of cervical fusion cases, but it's not like you have a car wreck and within a few months you get the cervical fusion. That's rare. That's very rare. It's usually years down the road. So that 4-year statute of limitations has always given me the opportunity to sit on a case and wait and see if they're going to need surgery. And because surgery cases obviously are going to be worth more than non-surgery, just the bills alone. A cervical fusion is $100,000, give or take. So that's a big change. And that's also going to cause more lawsuits because people like me that would normally be slower to sue are going to have to sue within that 2 years, regardless of what's going on in the case. And it's going to back up the court system even more than it is now. They've made a lot of other inroads. I mean, there's like a dozen things I could certainly talk about that they're making all these changes in these laws. That they've made changes about something called bad faith. Bad faith is that there is a body of law that's been around for decades and decades and decades that says insurance companies should act in good faith. And I believe that. So one of the bad faith mechanisms is, let's say an insurance company has a 100,000 limit and you have one of these people that needs surgery. So you know the case is going to be worth more than $100,000 and you show them the records, you show them the bills, you show them the MRIs, and then they lowball you. Well, with the bad faith thing, it gives the plaintiff sort of like a club. It gives them some power, empowers them, so that if they were to file suit and they had to go to trial and that jury hears everything and they decide a reasonable verdict of maybe $500,000, now the insurance company would love at that time to say, oh, we lost. Oh, too bad. Here's the $100,000. You can go after my insured. Have a nice day. That's what they would like to say. But under the doctrine of bad faith, there's no insurance company. You had a fiduciary duty to protect your insured, and you didn't. You exposed them to an unnecessary lawsuit. This law firm was willing to reluctantly take the $100,000, even though they knew the case was worth more, but they knew there were limitations in coverage. They were willing to take it. You gambled with your insurance money. This means that you owe the full $500,000, even though there was a $100,000 limit. So it's a great mechanism and forces insurance companies to be more reasonable and act in good faith. But if they abolish that, then the insurance companies are going to feel like they're bulletproof and never offer policy limits when they should by all realistic standards. In other words, it takes all the teeth out of the law that protects the little guy. So all this comes back to the claimant, the person that is just so unfortunate to have one of these car wrecks and finds themselves in the system. So they've been trying to reform Florida's laws ever since I've been a lawyer. I became a lawyer in 1979, and every year there's been something proposed. I've never seen anything of this nature where they've got like 12 bullet points. I've talked about three. Some are very technical and so forth, but now they're going to have juries doing a lot more math, and whenever, I think it's going to increase the odds of inconsistent verdicts and appeals, so I think there's going to be more appeals because of the law. I think there's going to be more trials, and the judges already are overworked. If you talk to any of the circuit judges, they'll tell you there's not enough time in the day. In fact, I know locally our judges petitioned for the governor, for the legislature to fund another judgeship in the First Judicial Circuit, which is our circuit. Escambia, Santa Rosa, Okaloosa, and Walton counties are what we call the First Judicial Circuit. They've asked for one more judge. That was denied because they just said, we don't have the money for it. And meanwhile, so these judges are doing not just personal injury cases. They got to do criminal. They got to do divorce, you know, probate, you know, condominium actions, and God knows what. So anyway, I see that the system is just going to be crazily overloaded because of this. So there's just many, many changes, and it's not till the person actually gets into the wreck that they fully understand what's going on. Then they're in shock, you know, but these things get passed. Us as citizens know nothing about it. I'm sure the people listening to us right now had no idea that this had just happened, and it has. And the other thing that they have is they changed. I've always been proud of the fact that Florida was what we call a pure comparative negligence state. That means if you go to trial, the jury can compare negligence. So if I was driving down the road and I'm going, you know, maybe 7, 8, 10 miles above the speed limit. So yes, that's speeding. It's not horrible. A lot of us do it. It's still illegal and you're still speeding no matter how you try to justify it. And let's say a car pulls out from a stop sign in front of me, clear, bright day, no rain, whatever, clear visibility. They just pull out in front of me and it's a T-bone, a classic T-bone. Well, if it went to trial, the jury could say, you know what, Gross was speeding somewhat. We're going to find him 10% at fault. So if they find me 10% at fault and they find the driver that pulled out from the stop sign 90% at fault, then common sense would say that Gross should get 90% of his damages. I think that's fair. That's what we've always been. Alabama, I think, lives in the dark ages. They have a contributory negligence state. So if you're found 1% at fault in Alabama, you get nothing. So what they've done in Florida is made a hybrid out of us. They just changed the law. And so if you're found to be 51% at fault, you get nothing. So, and that may sound, well, but you may say, well, that doesn't sound too bad. If you're 51% at fault, maybe you don't deserve. But the problem is when we get to these so-called slip falls and trip falls, that's where it's a dicey area. Because let me try to back up a little bit about these. So, of course, I've handled slip falls and trip falls and so forth against retail stores in the past. And every now and then, if you're going to trial, sometimes lawyers have used what they call human factors experts. These are experts that help the jury understand what's really going on as far as the way humans operate and stores operate and whatever. And some of it, once I start talking about it, it's going to make sense to you. So let's just take Publix. I'm not picking on Publix. Let's just use them as an example. Like any grocery store, you got all your food in the aisles. We know that. But at the end of each aisle, there's always these display cases. And it could be whatever. And it's for spontaneous buying. You know, because I'll go in. My wife will say, Terry, will you go to the store? We need some milk and eggs and paper towels. That's the mission I've been given. You know, when I go in there, I'm coming home with a lot more than just that. It's human nature. We all do. And you know, but a lot of these display cases are for spontaneous decisions. Oh, look at this, a new spaghetti sauce. I'm going to try that. Oh, look at this. And whatever it is, and you may spontaneously grab it. So they pay extra. The vendors pay extra for these display cases. If you ever watch Shark Tank, they talk about this on Shark Tank. So, but what they're doing with the display cases, what are they doing? They're getting your attention on that display. Well, if you're looking at the display, then you're not looking at the floor. If you're not looking at the floor, you don't see where someone just broke several raw eggs on the floor where they dropped their eggs and you slip in it and you compress your vertebrae and now you need back surgery because of the slip fall. But if you went to trial in that case, what is public's lawyer going to argue to the jury? He's going to say, that person should have been looking where they're going. If they had been looking where they were going, they wouldn't have stepped in. The eggs are right there on the floor. They stepped right in them. But again, with the human factors, everything about a grocery store is getting you not to look on the floor. And I know, for instance, with my wife, she loves to bake. And when she bakes cookies, she uses only one kind of flour. She uses King Arthur. And if I buy her anything else, I'll get a lecture. So I know when I'm in that thing, I'm looking for King Arthur. I'm looking for King Arthur. And I'm just studying it. Well, I'm looking at the shelf. I'm not looking at the floor. And so forth. And because of that, people do end up shredding through somebody, you know, it could be eggs, it could be a banana peel, it could be somebody dropped a soft drink, anything that would cause someone to slip. And when you slip and your feet go out from under you and you fall that 3 or 4 feet on your bottom usually, that can compress disc and lead to surgery, much more so than a lot of other accidents. So we do see a lot of surgery cases out of the slip falls, but now with this 51% rule, you know, it's going to embolden the insurance carriers because if they think they can get their lawyer to convince a jury that maybe the plaintiff was 60% at fault because they were not looking where they were walking. They should have been looking where you're walking. Well, in theory, that sounds okay until you realize all the distractions that these retail stores have, because most of the time we go in the store, we're looking for something. We're trying to find that brand of salad oil that you want, or a special this, or whatever you're trying to pick up. You're looking at the items on the shelf. You're not looking at the floor. And I fear that it could lead to some very unjust verdicts, where under the old law, if the jury found you 60% at fault, then you'd only get 40% of your damages, and I'm fine with that. That's what the law has always been. Now it's not. So if you found 51% at fault, you get nothing. Big change in the law, and we'll see how that will, you know, factor in. So these amendments have already become law. The other thing which is interesting about how they force-fed this thing through, the legislature just started meeting. I think this law went into effect March 24th, to be technical, and I've never seen anything like it, because most of the time when laws are passed, it takes the whole legislative session, which goes all the way to April, number one. Number two, most laws come into effect in July, just to give everybody preparation time to get ready for the new law. They'll come in either in July or January of the following session. Very typical. I've seen very few laws that say it becomes law as soon as the governor signs it in ink. That's just a rare circumstance. So I know I'm here on my little soapbox, but there's just so much to talk about this new law. Nobody's talking about that. Even the newspaper, if it has, it'd be one or two sentences, and I'm sure the average person would either miss it or not even understand what they're reading and not understand some of the ramifications. But I've kind of hit the bullet points of most of these things. Also, what happens in most of these injury cases is, you know, sometimes people either have big deductibles on their health insurance, or maybe don't have health insurance, or maybe their health insurance doesn't cover this and it doesn't cover that. Even if you got TRICARE, there's a lot that TRICARE does not pay. So what if you have this car wreck and the bills are accumulating? It's very common. There's nothing dirty about it. And it's very common for lawyers to sign forms with a doctor's office. It's called a letter of protection. It just says, doctor, I'm representing this person for the accident. Please see them. And if you see that person, we will guarantee that in the case you'll be paid. And a lot of doctors accept it, and then they don't bill them, they don't charge interest, they leave you alone. And then two or three years later, when the lawyer settles the case, then the doctors are paid. That's pretty much standard business. But now they're going to make this admissible to the jury, and with the hope of poisoning the jury to make it look like the lawyer and the doctors are in cahoots with each other, and so forth. You know, like it's some kind of scheme to defraud insurance companies, and they've opened up that door where it's just been just a practice that has been great for the plaintiff. Especially, there's still a lot of people out there that either don't have health insurance or even got Medicaid. There's so much that Medicaid does not pay. Medicaid hardly pays anything. So a lot of these people on Medicaid, the doctors don't want to wait. They're not going to just see you and let you run up a tab of $10,000 without any assurance of being paid at the end. So these are what we're faced with. And the system, it's very sad to me. I've been a lawyer for 43 years, and, I still plan on practicing some more years. But it's I'm in shock at the speed and the magnitude of these changes, and nobody knows about it. It hasn't been on the news. Nobody knows about it. And then all of a sudden you're going to find you or a loved one in a car wreck, and then your eyes are going to be opened up, and you're going to go, oh, my God, how can this be? Where did this come from? And the lawyer's trying to explain it. Anyway, so I've seen a lot in my career, but I've never seen anything like this. But I see that we're quickly running out of time. This has been Terrence Gross. I am a local personal injury lawyer. I have 5 offices throughout the Panhandle. Our principal office is here in Pensacola. You wish to call us in Pensacola, 850-434-3333. Our website is grossandschuster.com. I'm proud to say I'm my 3 sons in practice with me. And, we're just an old school family law firm. We love meeting people. If you want to Zoom, we'll Zoom, or phone consultations. We prefer face-to-face, and we're right there at the corner of Palafox and Cervantes. Thank you so much for hosting.